I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and new to the shop, Mario Loyola. He has been a speechwriter at the Pentagon. He is a frequent contributor to the National Review, and he's a director at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. That's a conservative think tank that assesses how policies, federal policies, affect Texas and the rest of the country. And take it away, Jimmy.
Thank you, Michelle. Get a sip of a beverage while you're playing. How you
allergies,
doing?
Allergies, man. Come on.
I know,
help
right?
us out.
I know.
Thanks for pointing it out.
It's no problem at all. Fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey.
Good, man. Great.
Super Mario, this is your first time in, right?
Yep. Thanks for having me.
My man, welcome. So check this out. Let's get things started with a tequila party. Hey, crack open the Patron. All right, Ruben, I'll let you explain that in a minute. But first, President Obama traveled to El Paso on Tuesday to deliver a speech on immigration reform. Some people are calling it campaign stumping. Ruben, as it turns out, you're one of them. Let me start us off, man.
That was probably the nicest thing I said about that speech.
right.
You got to understand that when Latinos see someone and they build up this idea of a big immigration speech, they kind of have hopes that somebody's going to go to the local university and talk about comprehensive immigration reform. We have to fix the system. But the cheap way of doing it, whether you're Republican, Democrat, whatever, is to go to the border. People always go to the border and they talk about enforcement. This is what I've done to keep people out. Okay. And they go in there and they brag about the numbers. They talk about the Border Patrol agents they've put down there, the deportations and everything else. And it just rubs a lot of Latinos the wrong way. It especially rubs them the wrong way when it happens to be coming from a Democratic president that they've given 67% of their votes to in the previous election. Mm-hmm. And Barack Obama has had for some time, at least for the last 8 or 9 months, a real problem with the Latino community. And it's a long story. Just the short version of it is, you know, his support for in the Latino community is dropping. It's still at about 55%, which is not bad. But the real worrisome figure is that something like only 30 or 40% of Latinos say they'll vote for him again. So they still sort of like him. They approve of him. But they don't really believe in him anymore. And they really don't think he's in their corner. And just to end up with this, the reason isn't just because he broke his promise to make immigration reform a top priority. You can make excuses for that. You know, the guy was busy, healthcare reform, education reform, other things to do, right? The problem with Obama is he has deported, listen carefully, almost 1 million people, somewhere around 900,000 people so far since taking office 2.5 years ago, more people than any U.S. president since Dwight D. Eisenhower in the 50s. And Eisenhower did it with something called Operation Wetback, where he moved 1 million people out at one time.
You could have prepared me for that slur. I'm sorry. Could you have let me know that was coming?
It's a historical reference. It's
okay.
A historical reference.
I feel you.
It's an actual name that was given to this operation. So it's not really good for Obama that while he tries to portray Republicans as the bad guy, he can't excuse the fact that in his own executive branch, they're moving people out left and right, deporting an enormous number of people, and it puts him in a really ticklish position. Ergo, he goes to El Paso to make the speech, tries to make chicken salad out of some other substance we know about, and it doesn't really come out.
Okay.
You know, certainly that's one perspective. But Mario, see, follow me here. I think he's deflecting this to Congress to kind of – and follow me. I think he's trying to build some consensus, so to sort of try to build this, like, us against them team, you know, to try to rebuild his support in the Latino community. That's what I think. What do you think?
Well, I think, first of all,
go ahead.
If you're running against the Republicans, which he's going to be doing in 2012, immigration has to be part of your platform, because the best way to get Republicans to start shooting at each other in the feet is to get the topic on immigration. So it doesn't matter what he says on immigration.
Right.
As long as he just gets everyone to talk about it, the Republicans are going to start losing votes. So that's the first thing. And I think that it was, you know, so much political fluff in a way because, you know, this – for example, what would
be a real – I'm
sorry, you
said was
impact?
Or was not. Mario, forgive me. You said it was or was not. Was. Okay.
Yeah, it was so much political fluff. I mean – and by the way, the same is true for Republican proposals on immigration in Texas. I mean, nobody really wants – you know, we – one thing that would really make a difference is if instead of using a paper-based I-9 system – you required all employers to verify the employment eligibility of job applicants through a national database. That would quickly cut down. That would make it really difficult for illegal, you know, for undocumented workers to find undocumented immigrants to find work. And if you create that dissuasion, then people start thinking in Mexico and Central America that they're not going to be able to find work in the United States. That would be a real solution. But for one reason or another, only a few states have tried it. Arizona tried it, and in the 3 or 4 years since it tried it, it's lost 30% of its undocumented immigrant population. But it's a lot of political fluff. And from the Austin perspective, I mean, I found out that the president was in Austin because the first thing I noticed was a traffic jam downstairs from my window. And then people started saying that it was because the president, the motorcade had closed down I-35.
And this was, this was with a fundraiser afterward? This was because he left El Paso and went to Austin?
Or I think it was the other way around. But he had a couple of fundraisers in Austin, which is probably the only place in Texas where it's worthwhile for a Democrat, for Obama to even attempt a fundraiser. But
I'd go to Austin for any reason.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Austin is hot.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Austin's great now.
Arslan, you want to weigh in?
Well, for me, what the interesting political debate, at least here in the Beltway in Washington, is the fact that obviously, about 10 days ago, we heard, the monumental announcement of the killing of Osama bin Laden. And, a lot of pundits and members of the chattering class have started to talk about how President Obama was going to use the political capital that he was going to gain from that, and what he was going to try to do. And one of, the hypotheses was to try and push for comprehensive immigration reform. And so, I think that, we can't analyze President Obama's speech in a vacuum. There is a congressional reality that we have to deal with, and I think that the White House has to deal with also. And so for me, it's going to be interesting moving forward to see, is President Obama going to use his political capital to actually push some sort of comprehensive immigration reform in Congress?
But he's not even proposing.
We need to deal back to the tequila party thing because Jimmy brought this up at the beginning, and I just want people to understand he's not just being rude and obnoxious, that he actually, you did write about
me? Perish the thought.
Fan ourselves that Ruben, you actually said that the Latinos need a tequila party to rock the vote. Yeah. So just explain that was what that reference
was about.
I'll
do that quickly. It ties into what Arslan just said about the political reality. The political reality right now in Congress is that the president has a divided Congress. Democrats control the Senate and Republicans control the House. But for 2 years, Democrats controlled everything in town, both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, both houses in Congress and the White House. Nothing got done on immigration. That really sent the message to Latinos that if you put in Republicans, nothing changes. If you put in Democrats, nothing changes. So what's up? And they're looking for a third way, and they're looking for a third choice, and they're looking for the tequila party is something that was talked about last year in Nevada, and it's talked now about in Arizona. It's been started up in Arizona. And basically what it amounts to is a bunch of disgruntled and disillusioned Latinos who are tired of being beholden to one party and written off by the other. And they're not talking about defecting a bunch of Latinos out of the Democratic Party into the Republican Party because, as was made clear before, the Republican Party is many times worse on issues like immigration and very unwelcoming. So what they want to do in Arizona through this tequila party that they've now started is basically put pressure on both parties. It's not a separate party with conventions and candidates and ballots and all that stuff. But it is a movement to put pressure on both existing parties to better serve this community and to say, listen, we will vote for a pro-immigrant, type candidate, Republican, Mitch Daniels from Indiana, who's the governor of Indiana, who helped torpedo an Arizona-style law in Indiana, or a Mike Huckabee, who has already taken heat from Republicans for supporting in-state tuition for illegal immigrants. But we're not just going to follow down the line for these Democrats who are oftentimes not as good and not much better.
Well, I know we got to move on because there are other things you want to talk about. But see, Ruben forgets. I have a long memory. Ruben is the same guy who's been chastising Obama for doing too much, for saying, why wasn't he focusing like a laser on the economy? He's doing too much, taking on too many things. But now our man says, oh, but he didn't do immigration reform, so he's the wrong guy.
Right.
And the only other point
–
and other sorry. I know I'm going to get you, but the only other point I would make on this whole deportation question is that this is a traditional thing that Democrats do. If they don't like the death penalty, they lock people up. And if you don't want to, and if you feel that you, if you want to take a tougher stance on immigration, if you want immigration reform, if you want a path to citizenship, then the trade-off has to be, it seems to me, I'm just saying that this seems to be what the calculation is. Just like, remember, Mario Cuomo locked up tens of thousands of people. Why? Because he opposed the death penalty and he felt that was politically the only way it could be tolerated. And on immigration reform, I think the only way, I think Democrats feel that they can advocate a path to citizenship is to say we are as tough on this issue as our Republicans were, and we're actually so that's my argument.
But they've avoided.
Remember when Bill? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say this is Mario. But this is the thing: they have done something that the Democrats have done something that Latino voters in the United States should be happy with, which is that they've really tried to make people feel safe here. I mean, it's not like there's a subtext of the immigration debate in Arizona. The state has adopted policies that are meant to make undocumented workers feel unsafe to go about their daily lives, to try to find work, and so they leave. But the Democrats and Obama don't view undocumented workers as illegal immigrants, and they've really tried. For example, if you're in a traffic stop in Texas, the cop may know that this is an illegal immigrant, and he can't check because Immigration and Customs Enforcement has stopped providing that service. Mm.
Mm-hmm. I think, quickly,
Ruben, we got to move on.
I think there's a different calculation here. I think the Democrats have it in their mind to be as tough as they can, so the Republicans will like them better. And I think Bill Clinton used to do that with the death penalty. I'm a pro-death penalty Democrat. It's part of the marketing that Democrats use to show they're not soft on given issues. And they do it. They've done it before. Clinton did on the death penalty and on immigration. And now Obama's doing it on immigration. It's not working out, though.
But a lot of people agree with it. I think it has to be said. This is not like this is in a vacuum. A lot of people agree with it. They think it's absolutely right. You break the law, you go. That's it.
Oh, absolutely. So you're talking to one of them, too. But you shouldn't go around the country bragging about it. My problem with Obama is he tries to have it both ways.
You're trying to have it both ways. We only got 12 minutes, yo. If you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly Barbershop segment. We're joined by author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Mario Loyola, who is an analyst. He's with the Texas Public Policy Foundation and a frequent contributor to National Review. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Okay, well, moving on to other concerns at the White House. Turns out not everybody is a fan of rapper actor Common, formerly known as Common Sense, most often known to his mother as Lonnie Lynn Jr. Now, First Lady Michelle Obama, she's a fan, and she invited him to a poetry event at the White House on Wednesday, but that didn't sit well with some conservatives and police officers because, you know, they're reflecting back some lyrics that he had earlier on in his career, more radical lyrics like those found in a song for Asada. Michelle, we have some tape, right?
We do. It's about former Black Panther Juanne Chesimard, who was convicted of murdering a state trooper on the New Jersey Turnpike in 1973. She escaped from prison a few years later. She now lives in asylum in Cuba. And this started when a union rep for the New Jersey State Troopers raised objections, saying that he didn't think that Common was an appropriate guest because of these lyrics. And we'll play them for you now.
Reflex, they lied and denied visits from a lawyer, but she was building as they tried to destroy her. If it wasn't for this German nurse, they would have served the worst. I read the sister's story, knew that it deserved a verse. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free, so dig it, y'all.
Thanks for that, Michelle. Mm-hmm. Chesimard is also known as Asada Shakur, so for the folks who don't know, but you know, I look at this like, you know, Ted Jones famously said, you know, if you should see a man walking down a crowded street talking aloud to himself, do not run away from him, but run towards him, for he is the poet. And you have nothing to fear from the poet but the truth. And thank you. Anyway.
Clap. This piece. Clap.
Right.
I'm snapping my fingers.
Right. But my espresso,
look, Common is in no way a gangster rapper. He like all rap. He's just a social commentary, and he's just doing his thing, you know. And you know, since those days, you know, he's making other rap, and he's making bad movies, you know, for Middle America. So hey, why not have him in the White House reading poetry? That's what I say. A-Train.
Well, he's considered a conscious rapper.
Well, yeah, I mean,
We're all conscious, aren't we? I mean, but
well, that's
I don't
a term.
Know
if, it's a term, yeah, meaning that he actually raps about things that matter, as opposed to what party he's going to go to next.
Well,
which I know matters to you, Jimmy. I know.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and he famously had a beef with Ice Cube about being a gangster versus conscious rapper. Go ahead, A-Train.
Well, you know, being from Chicago, you know, we all claim Lonnie Rashid Lynn to be one of Chi-Town's finest. You know, one of his, you know, penultimate songs, I Used to Love Her, with the her representing hearing every rhyme, talking about the evolution or devolution of hip-hop today. You know, what's funny to me is, for anybody who knows hip-hop, if you have a problem with Common, then you have a problem with hip-hop. I guess Young MC was busy busting a move at a Rotary Club because Fox News and Sarah Palin, you know, the woman who famously said, "Don't retreat, reload," who placed bullseye scope targets on her PAC website, on congressional targets, has more gun analogies than Charlton Heston. You know, what's interesting is that, you know, in 2002, when Johnny Cash got the Medal of Arts medal from George W. Bush, we never heard Fox News talk about the Folsom Prison Blues, where Johnny Cash said, quote, "I shot a man in Reno." Again, I think, you know.
Just to watch him die.
Yeah, just to watch him die.
Just to watch him die.
I don't think Fox. So basically, the nutshell is I don't think that Fox News, you know, could find a brown person that they like today.
Oh, that dag. Ruben, quickly,
the
Ruben.
In this country, people are so touchy, you know? It's like, if you, anybody that the White House invites to a party, I'm sure that there's somebody who could be offended by it. And people should just really do a better job of minding their own business. I mean, I don't know. Thanks, Mario.
Tell it, Mario. You know, Ruben, before we let you go, you and I both come from a police family. I'm curious about what your take on it.
I am actually against cop killing. This may shock
you. Well, of course.
We all are, dog. Come on, man.
Right.
I think we live in a really bizarre world where people, like a generation ago, we had this debate over Ice-T and cop killer. Now Ice-T's on television playing a cop. You know, we go all the way around. But for me, what I've always found interesting is like African-American women and moms who complain about offensive lyrics and rap. And I'm always in their corner. If this had been that kind of thing, I guess the left would be a little more conflicted because they say, hey, wait a minute, that is not appropriate for the White House. I don't necessarily agree with the attempt to censor anybody, but this is the way the game is played. Arsalan's right. When Sarah Palin makes comments about bullseyes or things like that, we go after her. The media goes after her. We ought to play by one set of rules and go after both left and right equally.
So he shouldn't have been. Like, so he shouldn't have been invited.
I think the debate is appropriate, whether he should have been or not, and it's up to the White House to invite him and take the heat for it.
All right. Jimmy, we've got to leave it there. We've got to leave it there for now. I'm sorry. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book, The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the Washington Post Writers Group and CNN.com. He was with us from San Diego. Mario Loyola is a foreign policy analyst with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. He's a frequent contributor to the National Review. He joined us from member station KUT in Austin. And we hope you'll come back and at the very least send us some barbecue. And Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, founder of themuslimguide.com and managing editor of the Crescent Post. He was here with us in Washington. Thanks, everybody.
Peace.
Thank you.
Yep, yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.